This episode is brought to you by The Manor, a premier addiction treatment facility in the hills of Wisconsin's Kettle Moraine Forest. Their program offers a tailored approach to those struggling with addiction in a secluded setting with no more than 11 men and women. With highly personalized treatment focused on trauma, Dr. Chantel Thomas and her expert team offer an authentic experience, creating the kind of deep emotional change that's crucial for long-term recovery. If you or someone you love are struggling with addiction, call The Manor at 414-930-1930. That's 414-930-1930. You can learn more about The Manor by clicking the link in the show notes or by visiting discoverthemanor.com. Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of this show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are. Falling squares
on TV screen. Still falling. I'm Leslie B., and this is The Path to Authenticity.
If this is your first time here, thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry, and this is The Path to Authenticity. So, here we are with the third episode with Leslie Barabas, Leslie B., who is a Jungian love coach. You can hear more of this conversation in the last episode, number 87, and that was a continuation of a conversation that we had a while back in episode 77. So, Leslie was great to have on the podcast. We also did a live Facebook thing, and she also posted it on Instagram. She's just been really a treat to talk to, and we've had some fascinating conversations. So, hope you enjoy it. Leslie B.
As difficult as heartbreak is, it is as useful and as much of an opportunity as it is difficult. Mm-hmm. It's a synonymous, which is counterintuitive to think of it that way, but if you need the energy for transformation, and what you just said about what changed for you was that the emotions, you were allowing yourself to feel them while you're talking about conditioning again. Mm-hmm. And what is the number one most powerful conditioning agent? Emotions. Mm-hmm. Because people don't want a relationship. They want to feel a certain way. People don't want a lot of money. They want to feel how they think they're going to feel when they have a lot of money. People don't want to avoid heartbreak. They want to avoid feeling whatever that mm-hmm. awful, horrible feeling, they're avoiding that. So we act, the ego, again, ego conditioning, always directs us towards pleasure and comfort and away from pain and discomfort. It does it automatically. It doesn't require thinking or learning. So when you said, I am going to make a conscious decision to feel this pain, even though it sucks, mm-hmm. I'm going to let myself feel it. You are no longer avoiding it. Right. And therefore, by not avoiding it, now you're taking actions that you wouldn't have normally taken because you're not afraid of the emotion. Mm-hmm.
Well, and so I guess this is why When we avoid it, we're putting it in the shadow.
Yes.
When we project it out, it comes out anyway in the form
of
anger.
You are a fast learner. You are a fast learner.
Well, it's like you speak a little bit different language than I do, and I know some of it. So it's like, you know, I'm connecting dots with more than, it's all very familiar, you know? And yes. I've devoted my life to learning this stuff, you know, mostly about myself.
Me too.
And to be able to use it to help other people, which, and a big part of it for me, especially now, the last couple of years, is you got to stop avoiding it. You got to stop avoiding the distress, you know?
What's tricky about the emotions is that even if we have an intentional practice, like I wake up today and I say to myself, I'm going to let myself feel everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm consciously making this decision that I'm going to. The ego is so smart.
Mm-hmm.
And it's automatically going to distract you. Or confuse you. It'll use confusion to distract you. It'll use shiny objects. So look at that shiny thing over there, huh? And then we don't even know that we just avoided feeling something. It's being that mindfulness, that cultivation of a mind that's present is not natural for us at all.
It's hard. It is.
It's hard. But yeah.
It makes such a difference. It really does.
But the good news is if this has become a practice for you, it's going to lead you to love.
Yeah.
And you'll never be 100% sure of that till it happens, because it's like we don't believe what we don't see as human beings. We just don't. But my mentor used to say, just believe a little more than you doubt. Like if you believe 51% and doubt 49%, but believe a little bit more than you doubt, because it's just human nature. We're never going to be fully. If we could, it would just manifest like in front of our eyes, and that would blow our mind a little bit. So it does kind of take this coax thing and this practice and this, you know, cultivating a focused mind, but it really, I mean, you're like 85% there if you're willing to feel your emotions, number one, and you're not avoiding them and you're not afraid of them, because that's going to empower you to be like, hey, Susie, so, you know, what happened?
Yeah, you know, if you're like, not afraid of the pain, I mean, then there's no reason to avoid the interaction that it might come from, you know?
Yes. And that opens up doors that would have just been closed in the past, because you would have been like, oh, not going there.
Yeah. Well, and how it plays out in normal, the way we would describe it, it comes out as confidence. That's
because it is.
It is. Yeah, I guess it is, isn't it? I'll tell you something else I want to throw into this as it comes to projection. One of the lessons that I've learned, and I was talking to a friend about this the other day. So I'm in love with someone, or, you know, so I'm in love with you. The love that I have for you, you know, you didn't do that. Like, I'm projecting it onto you. It was already within me. So,
yes.
So like, if you go away, I didn't lose the love. I lost the object of my affection, but like it, not to invalidate the hurt, but for me to just know that it's in me. It's already here. I already have it. I don't have to find it. It's just, what do I want to do with that? I'm not looking for somebody else to give it to me. I already have it. Does that make sense?
That you're describing projection. Mm-hmm. So we think of the shadow as just all the yucky stuff, all the qualities and personality traits that we do not want to be associated with,
right?
That are denounced in our society, in our culture, in our family, in our subcultures. And what we forget is all the talent and gifts and divinity about who you are beyond the ego. I mean, the ego is like a little pin top compared to like a vast ocean, because consciousness, you know, has no limits. There's no way to define it. So it's, and you're part of it. And so your ego is telling you I'm separate and I'm small and I need to protect myself and nobody can hurt me and you're a jerk. Everybody's a jerk. And there's this, it's kind of a lie that you needed to believe to survive. But there's this vast part of you that most of us have never met, that we don't even know exists, that we're not identified with at all. And when just exactly what you said, when you meet someone, so Jung calls this, for you, it's the anima projection. Mm. And you Google that if you have 5 minutes, the anima projection. And that is what you are projecting on a woman who you fall in love with. And fall in love is fall for a reason. It's because what you're actually seeing is your own divinity that you're projecting onto her. And there's actually clinical studies on about projection. And I believe it wears off after 2 or 3 years or something, like 2.5 years, I don't know, where this person that was, could do no wrong, who was perfect, who was just this angel, is now looking kind of more humanish. Like she's kind of annoying. And
the honeymoon is over.
Doesn't put her plates in the dishwasher. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the projection wearing off. Now you're starting to see without that project. Well, we're still always projecting, but it's not that divine, because what you're seeing is you. Mm-hmm. You're right. And so when people really know that, then, I mean, some people could become depressed thinking that, like, what do you mean? There's no real love.
Yeah, well, I guess so. Yeah. Well, I just think the way that we think about it is wrong.
Yeah. I mean,
and one of the things that comes to mind here is because, you know, that projection takes place and, you know, you think of, you know, that person who you fell in love with and a couple years later, what the hell was I thinking? You know, we convince ourselves that this person's that way. You know, we tell ourselves this story so that because we want to be with this person or whatever. And our tendency is to look back on ourselves in judgment. What was I thinking? Rather than realizing, you know, I have a lot of love to give. And that's what that was about. And,
yeah,
you know, when really, it's not a loss. You know, if we really buy into the notion that love is its own reward, I mean, it really is.
It's part of our human experience. Mm-hmm. It's part of what we get to enjoy. And if we can love, understand what it is and incorporate non-attachment, because when we start non-attachment, not to mean detachment, right. where it's like, I don't care, whatever, who cares? I'm indifferent. But like, no, I love, but I'm detached from whatever happens. It's, I don't, you know, I'm not going to judge the result as good right. or bad. Then we're really just free
right.
to love.
Yeah.
And not tiptoe around. And what if I say something wrong and the person doesn't call me? And like all that goes out the window.
Well, and I just think about one of the things that's crossed my mind multiple times is just how off track as a society we are with relationships, because I mean, there's so much fear.
Yep.
Well, you can't do this and you can't do that because he'll take advantage of you or whatever, you know, like
yep.
all the indoctrination about what we have to do to protect ourselves, you know, and then it just goes on and on. It just goes on and on.
Yep. And that's why I really feel that this work is a privilege. Mm-hmm. Because not everybody gets to do this process, and not everybody gets to or will ever know about mm-hmm. who Carl Jung was and how he will lead you to freedom within mm-hmm. your own mind. And if you think about, like we just talked about, how what freedom really is, freedom isn't money. Freedom isn't having someone there. Freedom isn't, it's not being attached to those mm. things. That's freedom. Meaning, if I have millions and millions of dollars and a wonderful relationship, I'm going to enjoy it. It's wonderful. It's a rich life, full experience. But if it's gone tomorrow, I know I still am the same value. I still have the same inherent value, mm-hmm. whether I have it or whether I don't. Whereas in our society, like you said, we tie ourselves, we define ourselves by whether we have or don't have these things. And mm-hmm. so there's this attachment, like I have to have it.
Well, and then, you know, yeah. one of the things we do is that, okay, so I meet you and we really hit it off, so we're going to be mutually exclusive, right? So mm-hmm. that means we're going to be together, come hell or high water. And I can't even think about the idea that it wouldn't work. And if I do, I should feel bad about myself because, you know, why would a good boyfriend do that?
Like, right.
And instead of, and the other person does it too. Like we have this contract between each other where we predetermine the outcome. We're going to be together forever, which is a fantasy, you know, but if we could stop and say, you know what, you're pretty great. Like you are worth investing and really giving it a go. And working through the emotional highs and lows together and seeing where it goes. And I know I love you. I don't know where we're going to be 5 years from now. The shape of our love might change, but I know I'll always love you as much as I love you now. But ultimately, if I love you, that means that I want you to be happy no matter what. And that may or may not include me at some point, right?
Yep.
So if we give ourselves that latitude and just, you know, I want what's best for you, you want what's best for me, let's see what happens. Let's go for it. And we're going to be here for each other no matter what. But that's different than just deciding,
you can't get out.
You can't get out. And I'm going to be devastated if you try. And it's going to be terrible. And, yeah, I mean, we could just do so much better. That's what's sad to me about it. Because it's just like the whole, vocational thing with this podcast. I feel like if we're doing what we want to do, you know, what's really in tune with who we are, the world's going to be a better place. We're going to be happier. And it's the same way with relationships. Like if we could just be okay with ourselves first and know I'm going to be okay no matter what. And also I'm not going to put a ton of pressure on you because I know you love me, but I know you don't have control of everything. You know, like who knows where things are going to be 5 years from now, you know, but but what we do instead is we create this script and then we live by it no matter what, because that's what we do. And then 20 years later, we're freaking miserable and it's in our shadow because we're pretending it doesn't exist. And then we're treating people like garbage because it's got to come out somehow. Right.
I think that's a pretty good summary. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and you know what you're describing again? Ego.
Yeah.
Because the ego is all about number one. Mm. And it's like you just described it so well. It's like, I don't care if you're happy. You don't leave me.
Right, right, right. Yeah. Which that is the opposite of love. That's not what love is.
Right. Right.
Have I talked to you about the Course in Miracles? Do you know anything about a Course in Miracles?
Yes, I do. Okay. I used to be, I read a lot of Marianne Williamson when I was in my late teens, early 20s.
Oh my gosh. That's heavy. In your late teens, Marianne.
That's what all started. 18 years old. Actually, I started with Louise Hay and then I graduated. So that I think I moved on to Wayne Dyer and then, and then a little bit later, Marianne Williamson. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's where a lot of this all is very consistent with the course. It is.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, this is where I've learned this stuff. One of the places.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
See, that's interesting that you say that. Again, it's all interpretation. What I remember because Marianne Williamson's work was based on the Course in Miracles. Mm-hmm. I remember her always referencing
it. She's a teacher. Yeah. She's a teacher of the course.
Okay. But I don't remember it being similar to this. So if I bet now, if I went picked it up today, I would, of course, connect the dots, but that's funny.
Yeah. No, no, it is very much. I mean, it's really deep. But, you know, with this whole idea of wanting what's best for someone else, you know, and the course kind of has its own jargon that doesn't mean the same thing in the rest of the world. Like there's a special relationship versus a holy relationship. And a holy relationship is I want what's best for you. You want what's best for me. No other motives. Like that's what it is. A special relationship is there's something I need from you or something I'm trying to get from you. It could be validation. It could be sex. It could be like if there's another motive besides me wanting what's best for you, then it's not really love.
Yeah. Jung has a different but very similar way of describing the stages of life as we mature and, you know, where someone is and what their motive is, like you said, when they're in their 20s, what they're trying to get from others versus the next stage of a relationship someone would be capable of giving at a very different level. Ultimately, it's just pure love. Mm. Just pure love. And it's only could we potentially get there if we really see the ego for the operator that it is. Mm-hmm. And because again, we're not going to stop the ego functioning, right? No one has the ability, because it's like, we're not going to stop our kidneys from doing what it does. We're not going to stop. Like, I'm going to stop my digestive system. Like, no, we're actually not going to stop our digestive system. It's just going to do what it does.
Right. Well, it's funny because I use this analogy, and I'm going to write something about this. You mentioned stopping your digestive system.
Yeah.
That's essentially what we do with emotions. I mean, especially men, we deny them. We don't experience them. When, what if it was you needed to defecate and you just pretended you didn't?
Needed a what?
Defecate.
Oh, and you just pretended you didn't.
Then what would happen?
Right.
You'd do it anyway, and it would come out, and it would be a mess, and it would like make people mad. And the same thing happens with emotions. We That's spill awesome. Them out I all love over other that. People.
Yes. Great, great analogy. I will not steal that from you.
Well, if you use it, give me credit.
Okay.
Okay.
No, it's really perfect though.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, I it's so wonderful that you are taking this work and helping people with addiction. And, you know, because Jungian work or the Jungian model or the Course in Miracles can be applied in any area of our life, obviously not just love and relationships or dating relationships. But it's just, when you kind of break it down, it's like at some point you might have had a doubtful voice about doing what you're about to do. And imagine if you listened to that ego narrative telling you like, I don't know, is this really going to work?
Oh, well, that's part of why I'm like talking about this, because I did listen to it.
We all did.
I went down that path for a while. And it was, and it was misery, you know, and that's, I feel like, part of the reason why I wanted this to be about authenticity is because, you know, I really thought about it. Like, what is all of this about? Like the addiction work and everything, you know, because to me, addiction is really just a way that some people manage their distress, you know? But if I really look at, and we all have distress, we all manage it in different ways. Some people it's alcoholism. Some people it's sex addiction. Some people it's workaholism. Some people it's having their nose in their phone 18 hours a day, whatever. You know, we all have our own ways of dealing with stuff. So it's really the human condition is what we're talking about.
Yep.
But man, where was I going with that? I lost my train
you
of thought.
You listened to the voice that told you not to do it.
But the thing is that really, if I look at everywhere I've gotten off course in life, the big things that hurt and cause problems and all that, I can always tease out that I betrayed myself somehow. I wasn't true to myself. I wasn't authentic. And if I would have been, it would have worked out better. You know,
but it's all perfect. It really truly is all perfect, exactly the way it happened.
Well, because I had to learn that. I had to learn it.
Yeah. Well, thank goodness you did learn it.
Yeah.
And you came to see that had you not listened to that voice and in so doing betraying your higher purpose, you wouldn't have built up the stamina to do what you're doing.
Yeah.
So you see how it's like this backwards.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, listen, I mean, I'm convinced. I mean, it was, there are no mistakes. You know, it's might not always go the way that we want it, but you know, I can look at, you know, in a certain way, you know, my life some people might look at it as tragic, what I went through as a young adult, you know? I mean, I literally almost drank myself to death because I was in, you know, it was an existential crisis. I knew I wasn't living out my purpose on a deep level. I knew. I just knew my life didn't feel like it meant anything. I wasn't where I was supposed to be. And it took that to shake me loose, you know? And, but every job I've ever had always led to the next. It's how life works, you know, and it's like the whole thing about someone who succeeds is just someone who failed, you know, a lot of, you know, kept going after each failure. That's it. I mean, so like, but every, you know, that alcoholism thing, I mean, it turned out to be a gift. It changed the course of my life. And in a lot of ways, my family's life, because then I've been able to pass it along and help other people in my family. I mean, it is a gift. It hurt, but, you know, it doesn't anymore.
Did I tell you last time the Chinese luck story?
I don't think so.
Do you want to hear it to end our call? But
yeah, let's do that.
Because it's very fitting to what you just described, which is you went through extraordinary pain, but ultimately you needed that experience to use that pain, the energy of that pain, mm-hmm. to turn your life around, mm-hmm. to start to live your purpose, which, you know, the unconscious is always trying to get our attention mm-hmm. with that. But the ego shuts it down. Ooh, look at that shiny object. You should probably go for a run. What's on TV? Mm-hmm. Like,
probably ought to literally walk the dog again.
Yes.
That's the big one for me. It's only been 10 times today.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. What kind of dog?
He's a little rat terrier mix. He's been curled up in my lap this whole entire time.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
Yeah.
Love
he's
it.
A great little dog. He's got his own Instagram account.
He's your he has his own Instagram. He must be famous.
He's
your spirit animal.
Well, you know, it's funny because he is the most loving dog I've ever met. And like he's just so sweet and kind and it was just apparent to me, you know, when we adopted him, I adopted him like 2 years ago, he just fits, you know, that's my heart. You know, that's how I am too. Like if I get past all the barriers that I've created for myself, because, you know, the rules about not getting hurt and all that stuff, if I'm really my truest self, I'm every bit as giving and loving as he is.
So those barriers, do you see that they're an illusion?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Well, yeah. Okay. And, you know, back to the course, I mean, you mentioned separation in the beginning. It talks about that a lot. The illusion of separation.
Yes. Yeah. Being separate in the world. Yeah. Yes. And it's not to our fault, because our sensory perception is always pulling us outward, mm-hmm. not inward. You're seeing, tasting, touching, hearing,
smelling,
or the things around you. Everything appears to be separate. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we're idiots for perceiving separateness, because we're always, the senses are telling us we are. Mm-hmm. So it's a tricky thing. Mm-hmm. So the Chinese luck story is really about non-attachment to results. Mm-hmm. So in dating, it would be, you know, someone, a client coming to me, maybe saying, every time I start talking to someone on a dating app, they ghost me and I feel really hurt. Mm-hmm. Like, even though I don't know these people, and it's such a letdown. I'm going to delete the app. I don't want to do it anymore. So this is how that's one just really micro example of how we are conditioned by our emotions. Mm-hmm. We don't want to get let down. We don't want to feel disappointed. We don't want to feel rejected. And we're buying into that idea in the first place. But nonetheless, we're going to avoid what we believe is the source of those feelings, which is the online dating app and the people that are mean on there, and or they don't care, or they're just looking for the next opportunity or whatever. So keep that kind of scenario in mind as I tell the story, because the story has nothing to do with dating, but it has everything to do with non-attachment. So there's this village of people, and they all help each other, and the wife gets pregnant, and all the villagers come around and they say, "Oh, you're so lucky you're pregnant. I hope you have a boy. You'd be so lucky if you have a boy, because then he can help you on the farm and he can help you with the production on the farm, and everyone will have more food. It's a wonderful thing. I hope you have a boy if you're lucky." And so the wife has her baby and it's a boy, and the farmers say, "Oh, this is such good luck. You have such good luck. You have a boy. It's so wonderful. Oh, this is great for everybody." So the boy is helping on the farm one day, and he leaves the gate open by accident, and one of the horses escapes. And the villagers come over and they say, "Oh, you're so unlucky. Your son is so irresponsible, left the door open. Now, you know, you're going to have a loss of production because you're down a horse. This is bad for everybody. You know, this is just terrible, terrible." So the farmer says, maybe it's good. Maybe it's bad. I don't know. Kind of just leaves it open-ended. And so the wild horse that got loose went and rounded up three more wild horses and came back with three additional horses. And now the villagers come over and they say, "Oh, you're so lucky. Now you've tripled your production. Oh, this is so lucky. This is so lucky. This is wonderful." Farmer says, maybe it's good. Maybe it's bad. So the son is riding one of the wild horses around the farm one day, and he falls off and breaks his leg. And again, the villagers, there's the judgment again. "Oh, this is bad. What are we going to do? Now we can't help you. Now we're going to slow down production. We're not going to have enough food. This is bad. This is bad. This is bad." And the farmer says, maybe it's good. Maybe it's bad. I don't know. We'll see. So then there's a war, and the government comes around recruiting drafting all the men. And they say, "Sir, we can't take your son because he has a broken leg. He's injured." And the villagers say, "Oh, you're so lucky that your son's injured, because otherwise he would have risked his life and gone to war." And he says, "Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe it's good. Maybe it's bad." And you see the what we judge as a result in the moment can have the appearance of being good or being bad. Somebody didn't call me. Somebody stood me up. Mm-hmm. Somebody ghosted me. See, this is bad. Why is this happening to me? La, 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 la. We go on and on in our mind. And we can't have the foresight for where this is leading. We don't know where it's leading. We only know that it sucks right now. Mm-hmm. Or we think it's great. This is great. Let's celebrate. This is awesome. This is the best thing that could have ever happened to me. But we really don't see the whole picture ever. Mm-hmm. So that if we can be like the farmer and remove the attachment to the result and say, "Okay, yes, this does appear to be a good result, but I don't know yet." It's not to say that we have to predict the future or that we should predict the future. It's to keep it open. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, this is happening to me and it has the appearance that this is bad. But what if that person who stood you up led to you chatting with someone, mm-hmm, else that you wouldn't have chatted with that becomes your best friend or that introduces you to the person that's your perfect match. You know, it's just, we just don't ever know.
The job you thought you wanted and were so devastated you didn't get it might have kept you from, you know, finding your purpose.
Yes.
It's funny. I'm as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about many years ago when I first moved to Florida and was, I don't know, probably less than a year into my recovery. I was working in this construction job and, you know, got laid off on a Friday. You know, the guy ran out of work. And I'd never really had anything like that happen before. And the foreman was, you know, we were riding around in his truck. And I'm like, oh, man, this is, I don't know what I'm going to do. And he's like, what do you mean? You know, and it's, this is bad. You know, like, I lost my job, you know. And it was like I was kind of felt like I was supposed to be really upset and was not quite, but I was a little. And he just looked at me and he said, it doesn't have to be good or bad. It just is. And I've never forgotten that, you know, like, and it's kind of the same thing. Like,
yeah,
we get to decide. We ultimately get to decide what, like, it's back to the projection thing, right? What am I going to project onto this? Or am I going to project my ego onto this to decide whether or not it's good, bad, whatever, you know?
Yes, that's exactly one perfect example. And it's that attachment to that judgment about that result that keeps the conditioning going.
Yeah.
Right? Where the result just perpetuates over and over because we keep putting the past on the future or on the present.
Yeah. Well, and the huge illustration of this right now in our culture is the pandemic. You know, this is terrible. You know?
Yeah.
The economy's closed. You know, I can't go to work. You know, when you think about it, half of them more hate their jobs anyway.
Yes.
Now I can't be stuck in this job anymore that I, you know, hated just so I could feed my family, you know, and people stuck in this pattern when, if you look at it, this is an opportunity to redefine ourselves. That's what it is. And I don't want to be insensitive because I know there are people out there who this is really throwing them for a loop. And not everybody, like, I've been very extraordinarily fortunate with my work, not losing any work. But there are a lot of people who, I don't want things to be like they were before. I want them to be better. You know, I feel like we get to decide. And I know for me, it's going to be better. It is, because I've decided. You know, I mean, but this is awesome. I love talking to you and I really appreciate you giving me so much of your time. And, you know, this is just, it's incredible stuff. And, you know, to me, if I have to put a bow on this, you mentioned earlier how depressing this might be to some people, you know, but when you look at it and you really think about it, we have a lot of power.
Yes.
We can, that power of what we're going to project onto the world, we get to decide.
Yes, we do.
But we have to own it and choose it.
Didn't Marianne Williamson say, I don't know, don't ask me how I'm remembering this. I'm surprised at myself. She said, we're not afraid of our darkness. We're really afraid of our light.
Yeah.
So that's so Jungian and it's so true.
Yeah. Well, and you know, what if I have it and lose it? That's, I think, yes, a lot of times what that's, what if I get it and then I lose it?
And that's the double-edged sword with attachment, is that we can't really enjoy something even if we get it, because then now we're in fear about losing it.
Right.
So it's like you're on the other side of the coin. You first you wanted it and you felt, you know, the lack of not having it, and now you have it and you're afraid of losing it, and you're losing both ways.
Right. Right.
So it's yeah.
And I mean, it goes back to being present, right? And just being in the moment. And, you know, like if you know who Chuck Palahniuk is, he wrote, Fight Club, and I've been reading, he wrote a book about writing recently, and I've been reading that, and it's great. And he has all these little quips from people who've taught him over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is, if you can't be happy washing dishes, you can't be happy.
Yes.
And it's true.
It is true. That is this so simple, simple genius right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. I have a client who's a physician who does volunteer work once a year. She goes to Mexico and she does like around Christmas, she collects a lot of donations and takes everything down there, medical supplies and gift boxes, clothing, toys, everything. And she shared a story with me about one of her colleagues who goes not to Mexico, but she went a couple years ago where there was like a natural disaster and they didn't even have clean water. And it was a hurricane. I want to say it was Thailand. It's maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And she expected to get there and see a entire community of miserable, sad, depressed people because they don't have clean water. They have nothing. Their homes have been wiped out. Everything's wiped out, gone. Boy, was she humbled when she got there and she saw like parents playing with their kids in puddles in the street, laughing and singing. She's like, what?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
How can you be happy? You have nothing. And it's like, just what you said, it's not about that. Mm. You either have it or you don't.
Yeah.
So it's such a...
Well, and to go a step further, you do have it. You just have to own it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like good love. Point. It's already there, you know?
It's already there.
It is.
Yeah. No, it's awesome to have these conversations with you too, Tom. It's, it's, we could probably like do like a marathon, like 8 hour, just.
Well, listen, if you want to, I know you do some stuff on Instagram and probably Facebook too, right?
Yes.
If you want to do like some kind of live thing, I'd love to do that.
Let's definitely do that.
Thanks for listening to The Path to Authenticity. If you'd like to learn more about our guest, you can find links in the show notes or visit our website at thepathtoauthenticity.com. If you're interested in becoming a sponsor, if you have a suggestion for a topic, or you know someone who would make a great guest, email the show at thepathtoauthenticity@gmail.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. If you know someone else who would enjoy the show or even just a particular episode, please share it with them. Every little bit helps. If you're not already a subscriber, please consider becoming one wherever it is you choose to listen. You can find the show on Patreon, where by becoming a patron, you can hear episodes before they're released publicly. You can gain access to supplemental content. There are other benefits in the various tiers. Visit patreon.com/thepathtoauthenticity. Join our Facebook community or follow the show on Instagram, both at The Path to Authenticity. We also have a YouTube channel. You can connect with us on Twitter or Pinterest. To hear the songs from this and every episode, you can find the Path to Authenticity playlist on Spotify. Obviously, there are a lot of ways you could be spending your time, so I appreciate you spending some of it here with me. I'm Tom Gentry. Thanks for listening. Be nice.
great, honeybee.
The Path to Authenticity is powered by Equivox. For digital marketing and web design services, visit equivox.com.